Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
The COVID quarantine mandate shrinks, but not for everyone. I'm Contessa Brewer in for Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
Guilty on all charges, a jury convicts former officer Kim Potter for the death of Dante Wright.
We have a degree of accountability for Dante's death.
Tonight, the fallout from the verdict. Omicron spreading fast.
We're almost seeing it jump by 10,000 every day.
New Year's Eve celebrations in jeopardy. What New York just announced. Plus the new study offering signs of hope. Holiday travel in full swing.
You can't enjoy memories if you don't make them.
Airports and highways roaring back to near normal. What travelers are facing nationwide. President Putin's marathon presser, what he said about the prospect of war, and who he blames for soaring tensions with Ukraine. Religion on the decline in the U.S. The Supreme Court asked to block White House records from January 6th. And taste what you see. Introducing Lickable TVs.
Live from CNBC. The facts. The truth. The news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. Kim Potter, the ex-cop who shot and killed Dante Wright during a traffic stop, found guilty of first and second degree manslaughter.
We, the jury, on the charge of manslaughter in the first degree, find the defendant guilty.
And Potter remained composed but visibly disappointed as the judge read the jury's verdict. Potter's husband yelled out as she was handcuffed.
Love you, Kim.
Potter's defense lawyers comforting her before she was led out of the courtroom. Potter testified that she pulled her gun out instead of her taser by mistake and did not mean to shoot Wright as he struggled with officers. But the prosecution argued successfully that Potter was reckless during the deadly traffic stop. Outside the courthouse, demonstrators cheered and celebrated, chanting Dante Wright's name. Wright's mother described how she felt when she heard the guilty verdict.
Emotions, every single emotion that you could imagine just running through your body at that moment. I kind of let out a yelp because it was built up in the anticipation of what was to come while we were waiting for the last few days.
Kim Potter's sentencing is set for February 18th. The more serious manslaughter charge carries a maximum of 15 years in prison. But because Potter had a clean record, sentencing guidelines call for a sentence between roughly 6 to 8.5 years behind bars. Let's bring in David Henderson, civil rights attorney and CNBC contributor. David, good evening to you. What did the jury hear that convinced them?
Good evening, Contessa. I think what the jury heard that convinced them mainly was Kim Potter herself. Her testimony when I was watching it was equally ridiculous and offensive, combined with the fact that the defense took an approach to this case that I think worked pre-George Floyd's murder, but not post. And they came in and basically said, this is what it takes. He had this coming. And the jury definitely rejected that argument, appropriately so.
In the trial, we heard testimony that Potter was a model police officer. No one was debating that. What message do you think this verdict now sends to law enforcement across this country?
Well, Contessa, I think what you have to conclude that it sends is exactly what the prosecution said, and that is that a mistake can rise to the level of being a crime. Now, from a legal point of view, I don't strictly agree with that analysis, but I think the police departments have to be on guard if, for example, you confuse your gun with a taser. And this is not the first time this has happened. This happened in 2009 at Fruitvale Station. Or you make a comparable error, it can result in criminal prosecution.
Prosecutors have indicated they plan to ask for longer sentencing than the guidelines. What do you make of that strategy?
I think that strategy is consistent with what you heard from Kim Potter when she testified. And you have to take her testimony for what it was. She admitted that Dante was racially profiled, didn't use those words, but that's basically what she said, admitted they could have put a stop to it. And all this testimony about her being an officer with enough experience to be a training officer really works against her when she didn't try to render aid after she shot him. Mm. I do think there's a good chance of an upward sentencing departure. I don't think she's going to get anywhere near the 15-year maximum, though.
David Henderson, I appreciate your insight. Thank you. COVID Watch. The CDC has shortened the isolation period for healthcare workers who test positive for COVID-19. It's now 7 days instead of 10, as long as they don't have symptoms and test negative. More hopeful news to report tonight. A new study out of the UK is the latest to suggest that Omicron doesn't make people that sick. This research shows people infected with Omicron are 50 to 70% less likely to get hospitalized. And the FDA today authorized a second new antiviral pill to treat COVID. This one is from Merck. It's authorized for adults 18 and older who are at high risk of severe illness. A clinical trial found it cut the risk of hospitalization and death for high-risk patients by 30%. Now, that's not as effective as the Pfizer pill authorized yesterday, but this treatment will be more plentiful. That's reassuring news as we watch Omicron surging and disrupting big holiday plans. In fact, today, New York City's mayor announced he's scaling back the Times Square New Year's Eve celebration. Instead of the 58,000 people in viewing areas, only 15,000 will be permitted, and they have to be fully vaccinated and wear masks, even though it's outdoors. Well, first things first, getting home for Christmas. Can you count on getting there safely and on time? The travel rush is on. The TSA says it screened more people yesterday than on the same day in 2019. And that was a Sunday. A little more than 2 million crawling through those security checkpoints. A lot of them have forgotten how to as well. Let's get to CNBC's Perry Russum live at Logan International Airport in Boston tonight. Perry, air travel, I'm sure, is probably looking a lot more like normal.
Yeah, and traffic is getting back to normal, which is a ton of fun. It was backed up for a few miles trying to get here. A line of cars outside, line of people inside.
Long lines at Logan Airport in Boston, not just for security, but to get a COVID test.
This is the world of COVID right now. It's not fun by any means.
Knight Coleman and Nikki Sheeman are flying to the Galapagos Islands.
We waited in line in Terminal E in the same line for 2 hours yesterday, got turned away, and then showed up this morning.
AAA predicts more than 109 million Americans will travel for the holidays. That's almost pre-pandemic levels. Air travel alone is tripling from last year, with nearly 6.5 million people expected to fly. With more people traveling, hotel and car rental prices are going up. According to AAA, the cost of a mid-range hotel is up 36% this year. Car rental, up 20%.
We change tires. We try to make the roads safe.
Roadside teams in Maryland are working to keep highways clear with more people driving.
You can't enjoy memories if you don't make them.
Vincent Marciolo is making memories he may want to forget. He missed multiple flights to Sicily waiting to get a COVID test. He spent the night at the airport.
It takes up to 60 minutes for the results. So we could be here another 3 or 4 hours, even though we're so close to the front of the line.
I mean, at least he's going to Sicily, right? AAA says if you are driving today, the best time to go right now, you should leave for tomorrow, anytime before 1 o'clock, Contessa.
Oh, but how disappointing to miss your flight because of a COVID test. So disappointing.
He's still going.
All right. That's the good news. Perry, thank you. Ciao. Weather alert here. A massive pileup shut down a highway in northwest Wisconsin today. More than 100 cars and semi-trucks crashed after sliding on an icy road near Jackson County. State troopers say nobody got hurt. That's unbelievable. Another winter storm could disrupt travel in the northwest. Parts of California, Oregon, Utah, Idaho, and Wyoming could see as much as 3 feet of snow through the holidays. But in the South, hey, break out that Christmas swimsuit. Houston, Dallas, and Jackson, Mississippi, set to have their warmest Christmas on record. The battle between the January 6th committee and former President Trump could be headed for the Supreme Court. The former president has formally filed an appeal asking the high court to block the release of documents the committee has asked for. We're talking about the more than 700 pages of records from his time at the White House. The committee wants them as part of its investigation into the attack on the Capitol. A lower court has already ruled that the National Archives should release those documents. The Supreme Court does not have to take the case. If it doesn't, the lower court ruling will stand. A rematch of the 2020 election is not out of the picture. President Biden tells ABC's David Muir he'll run in 2024 if he's healthy.
And if that means a rematch against Donald Trump?
You're trying to tempt me now. Sure. Why would I not run against Donald Trump for the nominee? That'd increase the prospect of running.
Those close to the former president have speculated he's likely to run again, but right now it's just speculation. No formal announcement has been made. Russian President Vladimir Putin insists he does not want a war, but he's demanding immediate guarantees from the U.S. and NATO as Russia masses troops along Ukraine's border. In his end-of-the-year news conference, Putin said NATO allies need to promise they won't expand east. He's accused the West of bringing missiles and weapon systems to Russia's doorstep. New satellite images from this week show Russian battle groups deployed in key areas of Western Russia. Meanwhile, Ukrainian troops have been running combat drills with American-made anti-tank Javelin missiles as they prepare for a possible invasion. Here's NBC's senior international correspondent, Keir Simmons.
Contessa, today at his news conference, which lasted some 4 hours, President Putin wielded a diplomatic carrot and a stick. He suggested that talks with Washington and Western European leaders are gaining traction, but at the same time demanded that the West concede to his demands. President Putin wants NATO to no longer engage militarily with Eastern European countries and no longer expand eastward. Those are the kinds of demands that the West simply cannot agree to. And you heard that from Washington today.
Facts are a funny thing, and facts make clear that the only aggression we're seeing at the border of Russia and Ukraine is the military buildup by the Russians and the bellicose rhetoric from the leader of Russia.
While the White House says there is no agreement on a time or place for talks, they do appear to be ready to take place in early January. Exactly what those talks will amount to, well, that is another question. But for now, an invasion by Russia into Ukraine looks less likely. Contessa?
Keir, thank you. Researchers who study aging now say a 5-year-old today should expect to live to be 100. Coming up, what a longer life means for how long we work. Plus, that oh-so-sacred annual ritual of dashing around town for a last-minute gift. But supply chain disruptions could be the big Grinch in this picture. So tonight, and not to oversell this, how to get everything you need in time for the big day. And more than 40% of millennials say they're just not that into organized religion. Now pastors, priests, and rabbis are trying new outreach to fill those pews.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith, back in 60 seconds.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Many predicted the supply chain crisis would cause a nightmare before Christmas. President Biden insists it didn't happen. Now retailers and shippers promising to deliver last-minute gifts for the holidays. Here's NBC's Carrie Sanders.
It's the final countdown to Christmas, and if you've been stressing about supply chain shortages and shipping delays ruining your holiday, the president says, worry no more.
The much-predicted crisis didn't occur. Packages are moving.
Gifts are being delivered. Shelves are not empty.
On Wednesday, his Supply Chain Disruptions Task Force reported that bottlenecks have been cleared at the nation's busiest ports, and new partnerships with trucking companies are helping to address driver shortages on the road. As a result, he says retail inventories are now close to pre-pandemic levels, and delivery times at major shippers are faster than they were in 2019, despite record holiday demand. In fact, between 97% and 99% of holiday deliveries have been made on time. To help you avoid making Santa's naughty list, we've got all the last-minute shopping deadlines to ensure your gifts arrive on time. Ship today, and FedEx and UPS will guarantee next-day delivery for Christmas Eve. The Postal Service by Christmas Day.
I sent it priority, so I didn't mess around.
For a premium, FedEx also offers same-day delivery on Christmas Eve. Amazon Prime members can get next-day delivery on some products today and same-day delivery on Friday for orders over $25, but only in certain zip codes. Walmart, Best Buy, and Target all offer next-day delivery on orders made today. Place your orders on Christmas Eve, and they'll deliver most products that same day, or you can pick them up curbside at the store. Target has added 18,000 curbside spaces to make it easy.
You could place your order all the way up to 6 p.m. on Christmas Eve, and we'll have it ready for you in a couple hours. And when you get here, just put in your parking spot number, and we'll be out and put in your trunk in a couple minutes.
For the news, I'm Kerry Sanders.
Many Americans have this idea about retirement. It's a big goal you work toward for 40 years. You get to your 60s, you throw in the towel and you go play golf or bunco. Well, according to the Stanford Center on Longevity, younger generations are in for a much longer journey. A recent report from the group suggests as many as half of today's five-year-olds can expect to live to the age of 100. And over the course of 100-year lives, we can expect to work 60 years or more. Professor Laura Carstensen now, the director of the Stanford Center on Longevity and one of the authors of that study. It's so good to see you today, Professor. Look, you've got the average U.S. retirement age right now, 62, according to Gallup. So working to 80, that's a big change.
It's a big change. It's a big change. But for most people, it is impossible to save enough money in a 40-year work life to not have to work at all for 30 additional years. And that's the kind of future that we're looking at today. People will almost certainly work longer.
And we know from research that you spend more in retirement typically than you anticipate. So working longer makes a lot of sense. But if we're working longer, what does that mean for how long we go to school?
Well, we're going to need to change how we educate ourselves, and we're going to need to change how we work. So education's going to have to last all the way through our lives. There's no way that we're going to complete educations in our early 20s and then think we're going to be prepared for working 60 years. So we'll need education to be interwoven throughout our work lives, but we also have an opportunity to work less in any given week and any given day.
Do you think that this is also going to change the way retirement looks when you actually get there, that maybe it won't be just nothing but free time on your hands?
You know, there's no reason to think that 30 years of free time is good for people psychologically. It's good for people to work, but it isn't good for people to work the way we work today, which we pack way too much work in the middle of life. And then we say, bingo, retirement, and now nothing's expected of you. What we need to do is to have more flexible opportunities, abilities to work part-time throughout our work lives when we're parents of young children, and then to work more at different stages in our lives. And then we need kind of flexible off-ramps so that people may come to work 10 hours a week or 12 hours a week, but many more years.
Well, flexibility has started to become the key word for the pandemic. Maybe we can get started on that for retirement as well. Professor, thank you so much for your time. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
Can America get a handle on cybersecurity in 2022? Our Eamon Javers reports on what the year ahead will hold. And new numbers out give us a picture of religion in decline, how many Americans are losing faith, and how some houses of worship are trying to win them back. Next.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
It's not uncommon for people to seek God during times of hardship. And in some ways, the pandemic has been no different. But even before COVID, a growing number of Americans were moving away from organized religions. And the pandemic didn't do anything to stop that trend. A survey this month from the Pew Research Center found 29% said they had no religious affiliation. That's up 6 points from 2016, with the millennial generation leading that shift. So with the pandemic dragging on into its third year, CNBC's Seema Modi tells us faith leaders are trying new ways to reach out and touch someone.
For many, this is what religion looks and sounds like. Familiar customs, prayers, and holy sites. But the future of worship may look and feel very different. To reach millennials, 44% of whom say they have no religious affiliation, leaders are bringing the experience to them.
I use Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, TikTok, stories, all sorts of things to go to where people are, and that's where a lot of the young people are.
Hoping to answer the toughest questions about life and death itself.
As we emerge from this pandemic, the younger generation's faith is changing a bit. I think it's raised some timeless questions for a group that might not have had to confront them, so early.
At the East End Temple, Rabbi Josh Stanton says he's doing less lecturing and more listening.
My sermons are getting shorter and shorter and more open. And what I try to encourage people to do is discuss them with me, argue about them.
You want people to argue with you.
There's an old joke that for every two Jews, there are three opinions. Our culture for thousands of years has been one of debate and discourse.
Debating controversial topics like the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
The facets of the arguments and conflicts, et cetera, are super important. And I think that that's certainly a pillar of Judaism, is that intellectual pursuit.
More progressive religions are gaining popularity. Middle Collegiate Church grew by 500 members during the pandemic, even though its actual building was destroyed by a fire last year.
We've put social justice and democracy in the middle of faith in a way that really speaks to young folks.
Some critics would say you're changing their relationship with God. What you're doing is different than the traditional approach. What's your response?
I'm so glad I'm changing their relationship to God. If that's what we're doing, that's exciting to me. I'm trying to get God out of the box.
Member Perrin Allen grew up in a conservative Christian household, but as a gay man, struggled to feel accepted.
You had to do things the way the Bible says, literally, but I feel like the Bible and Jesus Christ believe in love no matter what. And I feel like I found that at middle.
It's not just love. Since the pandemic, spiritual leader Deepak Chopra says people are yearning for connection and community.
The pandemic showed us that people don't like isolation.
Chopra's foundation is hosting retreats where the spiritually minded come to heal, meditate, and connect.
We are creating both online and offline communities globally.
Rabbi Stanton views these changes as a spiritual awakening, not just for people, but the faith community as a whole.
Institutions are going to shift dramatically, and we are all going to be the better off for it.
Whether at churches like this one, on social media, or at spiritual retreats, religious leaders we spoke to say the pandemic has fostered a stronger connection to spirituality in younger generations and see it as an opportunity to engage with them. Contessa?
Seema Modi. Flights out of Afghanistan paused, the Taliban not letting evacuees out. Tonight, the growing dispute and how the Biden administration is responding. A Tesla feature under investigation, and now Tesla is taking action. What the automaker just announced. And the NFL testing less as it suffers COVID outbreaks. Could the new policy gain traction beyond the field? We'll ask a top doctor coming up. Boy, restaurants have had a rough year across the country. They faced the pandemic, of course, skyrocketing food prices, a critical labor shortage. In fact, a recent survey from the National Restaurant Association found that nearly 80% of restaurants are not fully staffed. Many restaurant owners say they hope the holiday season can help turn their businesses around, but the new Omicron variant serving another challenge. Here's CNBC's Kate Rogers.
Between supply chain challenges, labor shortages, and inflation, holiday 2021 was never going to be easy. But the Omicron variant has now thrown restaurants a curveball they hadn't seen coming. For operators around the country, there's been a pullback as the variant continues to spread, with holiday dinners and parties being canceled.
This is a big problem for restaurants because takeout and delivery is never going to be enough to sustain a restaurant that's paying a rent bill every month. We need bodies and chairs. We need to have a full house. We're going to do everything we can to make sure we can offer the safest experience possible, but we need that customer confidence in order to make that work.
Josh and Kelly Phillips own a restaurant group in Washington, D.C. They just opened a new location in the beginning of the month called Destino. Then the variant hit.
The launch week was very successful. We had a very busy week. Feedback was amazing. Food was coming out beautifully. And then the next week, the entire city is basically shutting down pretty immediately. Not officially, but effectively. So it was super busy, super slow.
Now the two are working to keep their staff safe with vaccine and mask mandates in place and rapid testing on hand. Another hurdle for the industry is what's happening in Washington, D.C. With the potential shelving of Build Back Better, that means additional stimulus for consumers is not a guarantee. And the Restaurant Revitalization Fund did help many restaurants, but about 200,000 are still waiting for more aid and help. Some advocates are hoping that the variant and Omicron could be a catalyzing factor to get lawmakers to take action here. Contessa?
Thank you very much, Kate. The price you pay for goods is going up. That's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. As Americans do their last-minute Christmas shopping, some bad news on inflation. U.S. consumer prices rising 5.7% during the past year, the fastest increase in nearly four decades. That's according to the Commerce Department. Tesla agreeing to stop letting passengers play video games on the center console while someone's driving. Yesterday, regulators announced an investigation into distracted driving concerns at Tesla because those games sometimes can be played while the car's in motion. Tesla is expected to issue a software update to fix the issue. And oh no, lickable TV? A professor in Japan developing a system that lets you lick the screen. The goal here is to imitate food flavors. The device called Taste the TV uses 10 flavor canisters that combine to create a taste. You can't buy it yet. It's just a prototype, but the inventor says it would cost about $900 to make. If you've got toddlers, they'll probably do it for free. On Wall Street, the Dow up 197 points, the S&P up 29, closing at an all-time high, the NASDAQ up 131. I'm Contessa Brewer in tonight for Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's half past the hour. Here's what's making the news.
Crisis in Afghanistan, the Taliban halting all evacuation flights, what we know about the crackdown, and the dispute over who's allowed to leave. Unlocking the secrets of the universe, NASA set to launch the most powerful telescope in history, what scientists hope to learn about distant planets and galaxies. But first, the growing impact COVID is having on the world of sports.
College football, the latest to be disrupted. The 25th-ranked Aggies of Texas A&M had a COVID outbreak so widespread, the team had to pull out of the Gator Bowl scheduled for December 31st. Rutgers now gets to play instead and will face off against Wake Forest. And here's the new policy for the college football playoffs. The NCAA says if one of the four semifinalists is unable to participate because of a COVID outbreak, the unavailable team will forfeit and its opponent will advance to the national championship. Other college sports and pro leagues have all postponed games and tweaked their COVID protocols to keep the seasons alive. Dr. Robbie Sitka now, health consultant and former vice president for the Minnesota Timberwolves. It's great to see you today. Look, we've seen these different approaches, Dr. Sitka. Notably, you've got the NFL saying, okay, we'll just test less. Is that the right approach?
Well, Contessa, happy holidays to you and thanks for having me. I think with the clear level of contagiousness and the clear evidence that asymptomatics can spread Omicron very quickly, college games and sporting events are significant risk factors for spread. And this is due to a lot of factors, the young age of the attendees, the lack of testing and vaccination status that we don't know for all of the fans that are attending. And I think it's really time to think about handing out KN95s or N95s at all sporting events. And even if not everybody wears it, it does provide value and reduce the risk of spread at these events.
Okay, so if that's the right approach, then do you see other companies sort of taking a lead from what the sports leagues are doing?
I think a lot of companies are doing this, Contessa. I think a lot of companies are starting to mandate masks again, and they are getting ready to test. I think you're seeing it in retail scenarios where it's companies like Apple and other companies that all of their employees are wearing masks, and you're starting to see masks come back. And it's really, really important that we have multiple layers of protection. Testing, masking, vaccination are all helpful. The early data does suggest that those who are boosted have less virus to spread and are potentially less contagious, and they can clear Omicron faster. So I think that it's really important for people to get their booster right now.
The National Hockey League has pulled out of the Olympics this year. Do you think that the Olympics should even happen in China?
I think it's a significant risk, and I think that it also underscores the potential for risk from that event spreading back to countries that are participating. So I think that we really, really should consider whether or not this is the right time or whether we should push it back.
Dr. Robert Sitka, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
Our Year Ahead series continues tonight. For the rest of the year, we're taking a look at 2022 and what that year has in store for industries like space, cryptocurrency, and tech. Well, tonight, cybersecurity. And unfortunately, 2021 was a banner year for ransomware gangs who extorted millions upon millions of dollars from American companies. And we saw alarming cyber attacks launched by shadowy state-sponsored hackers linked to Russia and China. CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers has been covering the growing war on cybercrime all year. So, Eamon, what can we expect to see next?
Well, Contessa, this was the year that cybercrime went big time. Before this year, most people didn't really worry about criminal cyber attacks, and they certainly didn't think about nation-state intelligence services targeting them and the infrastructure they depend on.
Security experts are calling a cyber attack on the nation's largest fuel pipeline the worst yet.
Right now, a Russian-based hacking group dubbed Nobilium, the group responsible for last week's SolarWinds attack, is engaging in another major hack.
Tonight, another stunning cyber attack, what appear to be Russian criminals, again targeting a major American company.
The headlines were relentless in 2021, and now the U.S. government's top cyber defender is warning the threat isn't going away in 2022.
I see a lot of dynamism and complexity and a lot of danger. This is a persistent condition, Eamon. This is not something we are going to fix. So we need to focus on the things that we need to do to protect ourselves. Cybersecurity is not really a tech issue. Cybersecurity is about people and human behavior.
That may not seem reassuring, but Jen Easterly says there are some things companies and people can do to protect themselves. Things as basic as making sure multi-factor authentication is in place. She says more tips are available at stopransomware.gov. The new year is likely to be dominated by fallout from the newly discovered software vulnerability known as Log4j, a flaw that has left millions of devices exposed to attackers. But the bigger headache for defenders is simply that the hackers have earned so much money this year, they're able to buy more robust systems and hire much better programmers, all of which is going to make them harder to eradicate in the future.
They're becoming more brazen because they know they have increasingly resilient systems, better engineered and constructed systems for conducting cybercrime. And so they are feeling more confident in their ability to conduct this crime and get away with it.
So after this tough year on the cybersecurity front, the experts, they just don't seem very optimistic about the new year. It sounds like we're looking at a 2022 with more hacks, more lost money, and potentially more real-world victims.
And you know, Tessa? I cover insurance, and the big insurers are all ringing alarm bells about this risk as well. Eamon, thank you for bringing our attention to it. David Kennedy joins me now, former hacker for the NSA and the Marine Corps, and now the CEO of TrustedSec, which advises large companies and governments. David, I feel actual fear when you hear that quote from the director in Eamon's story saying, this is not something we're going to fix. So what do we do?
Yeah, Contessa, this is a problem that you know, impacts everybody, you know, whether it's your home networks at home you're trying to protect, whether it's small to medium sized businesses, whether it's a medical institution or facility or hospital, cyber impacts everybody. And it's one of those things where, you know, as mentioned earlier, you know, the ransomware groups are making a ton of money right now off of going after organizations, nation states that are hostile to the United States and its allies like China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, are continuously enhancing their capabilities to go after us and weaponize us. You know, cyber warfare is a real thing, and it's something that's definitely concerning for all of us in the security industry, but also, you know, you hear at the board level and everywhere else, it's something that we really need to take as serious as possible. And most organizations and businesses, you know, as mentioned, as Jen had mentioned, look at this as a technological problem when it's really how you conduct your business and how to do it in a safe manner when you're incorporating technology.
Let me ask you, we sort of have this stand as a nation that we don't negotiate with terrorists. We don't negotiate with kidnappers. Should we take a different approach with those behind ransomware? I mean, should we stop paying off those who hack into our systems?
It's a tough call, because what would happen if that were to occur is that the ransomware groups would just go, you know, bonkers and start hacking into companies and shutting them down without the ability to actually recover. And I don't know if the private sector would tolerate something like that. I know it's something that's been looked at. You know, you look at, you know, potentially being able to stop funds and transfer funds to these groups and categorizing them as more terrorist organizations. You know, I think the biggest thing that we could do is start to hold these countries accountable that house these ransomware groups. Most specifically, the largest one is Russia. We're still being pretty light on our tonality towards Russia, and understandably so. But from a political perspective, I think going after countries that house these types of groups, you know, whether it's with sanctions or other ways to, you know, dissuade these groups from operating in these countries, I think would have a pretty big impact versus trying to shut down the payments. Although if we did payments, you know, it would probably be a pretty bad season for a while, but then eventually these groups would die out because they're not getting money.
And do you think that the U.S. government is doing enough?
Unfortunately, I think from a defensive perspective, they're investing a lot. If you look at what's going on with the Critical Infrastructure Security Agency and trying to protect our critical infrastructure, like our natural gas, you know, issues that we had with Colonial Pipeline and JBS, they're doing a lot trying to secure our critical infrastructure. The problem is that defense is really on our own when it comes to a business perspective. The government isn't going to help there. I don't think the government is being proactive in actually stopping these types of attacks and going after countries that are targeting us. If you look at what happened with SolarWinds, where they hacked into you know hundreds or thousands of different corporations, including some of the largest technological backbones like Microsoft, Cisco, Intel, VMware. There really was no reaction back to them. Same thing for China with Hafnium, where they hacked into a whole bunch of companies.
And we have
to retaliate.
And we all have a part to play in cybersecurity as well. There's even down to the individual status. David, thank you so much for that. We have an update on the crisis in Afghanistan. Over the past 2 weeks, the Taliban have stopped all evacuation flights out of the country. That's according to a U.S. State Department official. They say there's a dispute about how the airport in Kabul is run and who's allowed on those flights. At the Pentagon, here's NBC's Courtney Kubey.
For the past several weeks, the Taliban has been demanding seats on the evacuation flights leaving Kabul. They're hoping to fill those seats with Taliban fighters and sympathizers who are going to other countries to find work to send money back to Afghanistan. The economy in Afghanistan has simply been in tatters since the Taliban took over in late August, with humanitarian organizations now warning that tens of thousands of Afghans could go without food and be without any kind of heat this winter. Temperatures are already dropping, of course, in Afghanistan. Now, the Taliban's argument here is that they run the country, they run the airport, They run the airspace. They should be able to put people in these seats. But the Qataris who they are working with feel differently about it. When it became a dispute, the Taliban simply shut off all flights leaving the airport. Now, this comes after more than 74,000 Afghans were evacuated as part of Operation Allies Welcome over the summer. Those numbers according to the State Department. But tens of thousands of Afghans who helped out the United States over the two-decade-long war are still stuck in that country, many trying to leave. Now, with the evacuation flights halted, of course, none of them can get out. The State Department official is saying that they are hopeful that these flights will resume soon. But of course, it comes at a time when, as I mentioned, the weather there is getting worse. That makes operations at the airport more and more difficult, especially since it has not been at the same standards as it was before the Taliban took over. Contessa?
Courtney, thank you. Coming up, whale sharks. They're called gentle giants of the sea. We'll take you to Mexico to swim alongside the biggest fish on Earth. And when the James Webb Space Telescope launches later this week, it will be the most powerful ever. We'll talk to one of the scientists in charge of the project. But first, powerhouse American writer Joan Didion has died. She passed away today due to complications from Parkinson's disease, according to her publisher. Born in Sacramento, California in 1934, Didion began her career as a writer at Vogue. She's known for her essay collections, including The White Album and Slouching Towards Bethlehem. The latter half of Didion's life was marred by death. In the span of just 2 years, she lost her husband and adopted daughter. Didion chronicled those losses in her memoirs, Blue Nights and The Year of Magical Thinking, which won the National Book Award for Nonfiction in 2005. In 2013, President Obama awarded her the National Humanities Medal. In an interview with Time magazine in January, Didion was asked if she feared death. Her response? No. Well, yes, of course. Joan Didion was 87 years old. NASA is about to launch its next big thing into the cosmos, and what we could learn from it could be staggering. Today, the James Webb Space Telescope arrived at its launch pad in French Guiana. It's considered the world's most powerful and complex space observatory, and it's expected to launch aboard another rocket on Christmas Day. Scott Willoughby joins me now, Vice President and Program Manager of the James Webb Telescope. He's on site where the telescope will lift off. It's good to see you. I know that this has taken decades and thousands of scientists, 40 million hours spent building it. What has to happen for that final hurdle of liftoff?
Well, this is a big day for us. Thank you for having me on the show. We are that close for you mentioned a multi-decade journey, but it's really the end of a two-decade-long chapter, but the start, you know, of a decade-long once we get on orbit a million miles away from Earth and turn on that mirror and look back into time effectively with a cosmic time machine that will capture light and baby pictures of the universe just after the Big Bang.
What can it do that Hubble can't?
Yeah, so the engineering marvel that Webb is was able to create a mirror bigger than Hubble. So one thing it can do, it's more sensitive. It's going to collect more photons, more light. So we're going to be able to resolve things we couldn't. It also has an eye that's trained to look in a different part of what we call the frequency spectrum. So while Hubble almost sees like our eyes do, like our cameras do, and the optical, Webb's looking in the infrared. And infrared is something that everything gives up. It's why night vision goggles work. But infrared is also where those stories of the early universe that once started all the way back in ultraviolet and optical has been stretched into. So we're seeing in a different wavelength, and that wavelength will confess some of the oldest images that we'll ever be able to see.
Scott, I have to tell you that I think one of the most exciting things is not just to look at the history of the universe and where we've been, but also potentially where we could go. Scott Willoughby, good luck on the big launch.
Thank you.
Conservationists in Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula are trying to save the whale sharks, the largest fish in the ocean, often a target for fishermen. But now conservationists say they're bridging the gap between tourism, fishing, and the local economy by swimming with the whale sharks. Here's NBC LX's Tabitha Lipkin.
compared to all the other marine animals, I would say whale sharks are the ones that really give me the feeling of being tiny.
This isn't your typical conservation story. This is the true story of how conservationists in the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico came together to find a way to bridge the gap between fishing, tourism, and the economy, while giving the world a glimpse into the life of the largest fish in the sea, the whale shark. Jose Patron has been both diving alongside the whale sharks and working in conservation for almost two decades.
It's such a massive fish in an environment that is not ours. So when you're visiting their environment in the ocean and then you get the chance to see how big they are next to you, I think that's what I like the most about seeing them.
This striped and dotted creature is technically neither whale nor your typical shark. And check it out, the whale shark is the largest non-mammalian vertebrae in the world. In fact, the largest ever recorded was over 61 feet in length. But all 5 feet 9 inches of me feels tiny next to this whale shark, which can also, by the way, live to be over 100 years old. Jose describes the changes Mexico has implemented to protect the whale sharks.
But what we think it's important is that we were able to come together with the fisherman's community and make them realize that it's much better to protect the wildlife instead of predating on them, not only in the economical terms, but also in the social terms. So the fact that we have now all this group of ex-fishermen that have been doing this profession for many years, now switching from using their boats to go out and catching fish to now use those boats to bring tourism in to watch those animals that they used to hunt, I think it had made an incredible change, not only in their way to see nature and animals, but also in the way that we can really conserve and keep this place with the nature beauty that it has.
Sergio Aldana is one of those fishermen who now runs his own boat to take tourists to see the whale sharks.
More tourists now, and it's good because they really love to see the whale shark. It's very important for everybody to have the experience to see and swim with those great, beautiful animals. And the most important, the tourists now, they are conscious. 10 years ago, now they respect the rules. We got new rules. Everything's made for to protect the whale sharks and also for the people.
In switching, Sergio went from making about $100 US a day as a fisherman to more than $800 US an afternoon in tourism, which, when you multiply that out, adds millions to the local economy each year.
Tabitha Lipkin from NBC LX. Next, clear some space on the fridge. There is a new Christmas card from Prince Harry and Meghan. And this one has a brand new look at the newest member of the royal family. Prince Harry and Duchess Meghan released a holiday card today, and it has our first look at the newest addition to their family, Lilibet Diana. Lilibet, after the royal family's nickname for Queen Elizabeth, and Diana, of course, after Harry's mother, the late Princess Diana. And with the card, a message, Harry and Meghan writing, "Archie made us a mama and a papa, and Lily made us a family." The couple has mostly kept their kids out of the spotlight since stepping down from their roles in the royal family last year. From the royal family to our work family, here at the News with Shepard Smith, we want to wish you a Merry Christmas from our family to yours. And as we say goodnight, a look now at all the people who help make this show a reality on a daily basis. Wish you the happiest of holidays. We'll see you back here on Monday.
Christmas tree farm where the people would come.
to dance under sparkling lights, bundled up in their mittens and coats, and the cider would flow. And I just want to be there tonight. Sweet dreams of holly and ribbon, mistakes are forgiven, and everything is icy and blue. And you would be there too. Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hung where you can see every couple tries to stop.
Hang all the mistletoe, I'm gonna get to know you better. This Christmas, and as we trim the tree, how much fun it's gonna be together. This Christmas.
You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.